Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Rick, I know you're a little under the weather, but how are you feeling? Are you going to be able to survive this podcast?
Yeah, I'm, you know, I got my tea in front of me. I got, you know, some water. Hopefully you should be able to make it through this. No, it should be fine. It feels like, you know, even, you know, everyone in this area right now has got some sort of sickness or some cold or something. So, you know, just battling it day to day, hopefully get over it through the weekend.
By everyone, do you mean you and your roommate?
I mean, well, yeah, my fiance has been feeling a little down, her work, my work. Everyone's been sick there. I know, you know, with the Red Sox calling up Vaughn Grissom, we had to wait a couple days for him to be ready to go because he was sick. I know it's going around Worcester Red Sox. It's just, yeah, everyone. I don't know. It's weird. This seems late for this type of thing to happen, but here we are in May 2nd, and, you know, got a cold going around.
Well, I'll make sure to stay out of Massachusetts. West Coast, we've got a stomach bug going. So there are a few people at my work and their children that are not doing too well in that department. But you actually don't sound too bad. And I haven't heard you cough yet. So maybe that's where start to hear it. But you're sounding all right. But I will hopefully carry the majority of the load to rest your voice a little. And as always, we've got a podcast to talk about relief pitching. As always, we'll go through the news, injuries, and transactions from the past week. We'll discuss relievers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. And then we'll head to our main topic, discussing fastball velocity, where we'll talk about some of the leaders in fastball velocity and then also risers and fallers from 2023 to 2024. But let's get right into it, starting with the news. Left-handed pitcher Brooks Raley for the Mets has facing a potential long-term absence due to an elbow injury. Do you have anything else on this? I did not get a chance to read the MLB Trade Rumors post on that.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some sort of issue with one of the tendons. It seems like it could be a season-ending injury, and surgery might be on the table. Yeah. Unfortunate for, Brooks Raley. Was off to a good start this year. He pitched great for them last year. That's, you know, one of their key lefties that they rely on. So hopefully they're able to, you know, find some way for him to get back this season, but it's not looking good right now.
Yeah, if not, then Jake Diekman is going to be a major part of this bullpen. And luckily, he's been pretty solid thus far with a 37% strikeout rate across 9 2/3 innings. But they don't really have much depth there, as right now they've got Danny Young up. I've never heard of him. Is there anything else in there, anybody else in their organization that you're eyeing in terms of who might be able to take over as a lefty? Or do you think this is something that if the Mets are competitive later in the season that they address at the deadline?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those deadline things. A lot of teams looking for left-handed bullpen help at the deadline. I feel like if there's, you know, if Raley's not able to come back, they'll probably add a second one at some point. I don't think internally there's much to really go on. Josh Walker, maybe they've had him. He's been like up and down the roster, but he hasn't shown anything yet that, you know, makes me think he's going to be a long-term fix in this bullpen.
I think a good target for them is Tanner Scott. Scott will be a free agent after this year. He's a lefty in their division. The Marlins are likely to look to trade him at the deadline. I think Scott's going to be a big get, especially because he's turned it around after his rocky rough start to the season. But that's Brooks Raley, who's facing an extended absence due to his elbow injury. Matt Brash had a bullpen session where everything felt terrible. That is, I think, from his mouth, or at least from the guy that goes and reports on the Mariners. But Matt Brash not looking good in his return. It sounded like a week ago that he could possibly return this week, but that is no longer the case. Now I think we might see Matt Brash out until June.
I mean, at the earliest, yeah. It doesn't... it's been a while, but since he had that, since that news came out, and I've been, you know, trying to figure, I haven't seen any news. He was supposed to go for, I think the, he was going to get looked at for like an, some imaging done from what's that, the Keith Meister, the guy who mm-hmm. does, you know, it's always the scary name when you get sent to him. Cause it's like, you know, could be a Tommy John situation, but they're, that was, I feel like 5 days ago. I've been holding on to him in some deeper holds leagues and like, just like, I don't really have the IL spot. What do I do here? But you know, I'm, it's been a very quiet couple of days with him. So I'd imagine we get some news shortly on where he's at. Yeah, hopefully by the weekend.
Yeah. Justin Hollander, the Mariners general manager, said the team is very concerned with Brash right now. So that's not a not a good sign. So there is a chance that we don't see Brash at all this year, which would be unfortunate because he honestly, when I watch him pitch, that's the best stuff I've ever seen. It comes out the arm of Matt Brash. So they will be without him for a while. That means Andrés Muñoz is likely safe in his closer role, and he's gotten a couple saves this past week, setting him up to be the team's leader in that category after being tied with Ryan Stanek for a while. And Ryan Stanek should be locked into plenty of holds going forward, but this once daunting Mariners bullpen now looks to be pretty flappable. Looks like you could score a couple runs off these guys.
Yeah, I mean, if Stanek's their best option, he hasn't exactly pitched, you know, that great this year. You know, I like Gabe Spear a lot. I think he's probably their second best option, but yeah, after that, it gets really thin. Especially if, you know, Santos has also been like, you know, they keep pushing back his ETA and it's just like, is he gonna be returned by the All-Star break at this point? Like, so yeah, I mean, they're gonna have to count on, you know, Trent Thornton and Gabe Spear for big outs, for, you know, down the stretch potentially. So something to keep an eye on there because there's, you know, not a whole lot of depth there all of a sudden.
Yeah, luckily the Mariners are pretty good at turning random dudes into lockdown relievers. So they should be fine there, but we'll see how that works out. If that news wasn't bad enough, here's some IL placements. Colin Poche, a lefty for the Rays, was placed on the 15-day IL with mid-back tightness. He's expected to just have a minimum stay, so this shouldn't have an enormous fantasy impact. Manuel Rodriguez was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Poche's a lefty, as I mentioned. So Garrett Clevinger, we learned this last episode. Garrett Clevinger will be the top left-handed option in Tampa Bay. Is he somebody that's rising up your closer ranks? He's been pretty solid, 2.38 ERA, 32 strikeouts, and looks to be a guy that's going to be in line for plenty of saves plus holds.
Clevinger. I mean, it gets me too. Yeah, he's moved up a little bit. I was, you know, he didn't pitch a lot last year. He was hurt. But I was high on him this, you know, off season going into the season. Then he got off to a rocky start, walking a bunch of guys. And yeah, he's really turned it around here lately. So it's good to see that. I mean, he does have really good stuff. He's better than Colin Poche in my mind when both of them are healthy. I think he's the better lefty there. And this is another bullpen, you know, with Fairbanks and Poche down. It's, you know, Phil Maton hasn't pitched well. You know, Armstrong's good, but they love to have him open games. So it kind of limits what he can do in the back end. And then it gets really thin there too. It's, you know, we know the Rays can turn, you know, some magic, into, you know, with their bullpen, but it's just, they're going to have to do that this year with this whole roster, to be honest. This isn't a Rays team that isn't what we're used to in recent years.
Yeah, very similar situation to Seattle here, where the Rays are going to work their magic to find some diamonds in the rough. Jose Cisnero of the Angels, a right-hander, was placed on the 15-day IL with right shoulder inflammation. Zach Kristofak was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. He was then subsequently optioned. Davis Daniel was then recalled from the minors, but then he was subsequently optioned. And now Amir Garrett, who had his contract selected from the minors, is on the roster. And he actually looked pretty good in his, I think it was just, no, he's had two appearances since being called up, but he's looked pretty solid thus far. Do you think he's somebody that could rise up the holds ladder in LA?
Yeah, I mean, he's a name that we've seen in the past have success. Yeah, it looks like his velo is up a little bit. That's good to see. it's always going to be the slider with him. The slider is going to get do all the work, do most of the work at least. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, there's no reason for him not to stick in this bullpen. It's like you just kind of mentioned, it's been a revolving door for one of those spots, and they. There's no reason for Garrett not to stick, and you know, not really a holds option right now, but someone to keep an eye on, especially, you know, with the pedigree and, like, you know, he was once a top holds option. So there's a non-zero chance he gets back to that form that, you know, he showed in Cincinnati in his early years.
And to the National League side of Los Angeles, Ryan Brazier, a right-hander, was placed on the 15-day IL with a right calf strain. Gus Varland was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Brazier was not great in his second year in LA, 4.63 ERA across 11 and two-thirds thus far. He did have four holds, though, so he was a guy who was being used in high leverage. I don't think that's going to be the case for Varland. In his first appearance, he tossed 33 pitches, so I think he's going to be a guy that is more of a bulk reliever. But the team also recalled J.P. Feireisen from the minors, and this is a guy who in 2023 posted a pristine zero ERA, and that was across 24 and a third innings. So it was definitely legit. It's not legit. I mean, he did get a zero ERA across 24 and a third. It's not earned, but still, that's a large enough sample size to say, wow, he was really good in 2023. 2022, you're right. Yeah, that was so long ago.
He was out all of last year. Yeah.
You're right. And then I remember when the Dodgers signed him prior to 2023, I said, this guy's going to lead baseball in saves in 2024. And yeah, not the case. Not looking like that. But I think there's a chance he could really rise up those holds ranks, because I don't think any of the guys above him, like Varland, Ryan Yarbrough, and Nabil Crismat, I don't think are going to be guys the Dodgers will trust in high leverage, though Feireisen is. And then the only guys ahead of him there, if you subtract the guys I first name, are Alex Vesia, Joe Kelly, Daniel Hudson, and Evan Phillips. So I think Feireisen could be the number four holds option.
Yeah, there's definitely a possibility of that. It depends on, there's so many guys on the IL here. Trinan could return soon. That's a name that I would put Trinan above Feireisen, but yeah, for now, Feireisen's worth, you know, keeping an eye on, because, yeah, 2022, he was, you know, lights out until he got hurt. So it looks like the stuff is, you know, for the most part back to where it was then. He's not an overpowering guy, but, you know, he has a good changeup slider mix. So, worth keeping an eye on to see what his usage looks like.
Yeah, especially with the Dodgers providing plenty of leads for the bullpen to hold. And our last IL placement, Drew Smith, a right-hander for the Mets, was placed on the 15-day IL with right shoulder inflammation. Daniel Nunez was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Drew Smith has been a guy that the Mets have trusted over the past few years. So, of course, he was getting holds. He had three holds and a save with a 2.70 ERA across his first 10 innings pitched. But now he's gone. And I don't even know. Jorge Lopez maybe gets into more games late. But I don't really trust him. Despite his 1.80 ERA, two saves, and three holds, Jorge Lopez is not somebody that I trust. I don't think there's anybody in the bullpen right now that I'm going to be targeting to, you know, get some holds with Drew Smith out.
Yeah, they have their top three pretty much set in Diaz, Ottavino, and Garrett. And then, you know, Diekman might be the other option I would consider. But yeah, I'm not really in on Jorge Lopez right now. He's outside the top 100 for holds. And yeah, the rest of the bullpen is definitely not on the radar as well.
All right. That'll wrap up our injuries, and we will wrap things up with transactions. Jeremiah Estrada was recalled from the minors by the Padres, right? He was a guy that was very interesting when he pitched for the Cubs. And now he's 25, so he's getting up there in age. But he did pitch to a 2.08 ERA at AAA with the Padres thus far, 8.2 innings. He struck out 60.6% of the batters he faced in that very small sample size, but that's incredible. And thus far, 5 1/3 scoreless innings for Estrada. And the prospect pedigree gets me a little excited, but I don't see a clear path to him becoming a trusted member of this bullpen in close games.
Probably not. But did you just say 25 is getting up there in age? Is that just, I mean,
I think I expected him to be older when I clicked on his page, and then he was 25, and I already locked myself into saying that sentence.
he's been around for 3-4 years. It's like a prospect that's been hyped up, so
feels like he's been around forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, there's, I don't really know, this bullpen isn't exactly, no one really wows me outside of Robert Suarez, you know. I feel like there should at least be opportunities for someone like Estrada or Morjon to Morjon, to kind of rise into a setup role. And I mean those two guys are both, you know, that's kind of their young stud up and coming relievers, I guess. But I feel like they're better than Wandy Peralta and probably De Los Santos and Matsui's been looking better lately. He's starting to get more swing and miss. But yeah, I'd like to see, you know, Estrada. His stuff's incredible. Like you said, the AAA strikeout numbers. I mean, he's always striking out people at AAA. It's, you know, having that command at the major league level, that once he gets consistent, you know, with his fastball command here at the major league level, then I think he'll be a steady contributor at some point. I just don't know when that will be.
Definitely. Carrying over those strikeout numbers will go a long way in terms of helping him rise up the ranks there in San Diego. That's Jeremiah Estrada. But Aniel De Los Santos is actually pretty interesting. Last year, he had a 14.1 strikeout minus walk rate. Right now, 27.5%. He's striking out a third of the batters he faces while walking less than 6%. And that's it's a huge difference. I just have no idea what caused it.
Yeah, he's definitely been better this year. You know, he's just pitched really well for them. He's throwing his slider more. Yeah, I mean, that's typically the answer. You know, fastball velo is even down a little bit, but yeah, the slider usage is way up. So yeah, makes sense. We'll see if that's something that, you know, works for him over the course of the season.
Yeah. The Cubs optioned Luke Little to the minor leagues. He has been up and down already, I think twice. They recalled Daniel Palencia from the minors, and I have a feeling the Cubs are going to do this all year long. So if you're relying on one of Little or Palencia, it might be headache inducing just watching these guys flip-flop all year long, and they're young guys, so they're going to have a ton of options. I think they've got to at least have three. Palencia's still got three. I think Luke Little should have a similar amount. So we could see this all year long. I don't think this is going to have a huge fantasy impact, but I was hoping to see a breakout from Luke Little, and maybe some others were hoping the same for Palencia, but I don't know if that's going to happen if they don't have a solidified roster spot that's consistent.
Yeah, and they already have some guys on the IL, so you know, once some of those other names return, it's going to be tough to see Little or Palencia stick on the roster, I feel. But yeah, I mean, I'm very intrigued by both of them. If, again, similar to Estrada, if they can, you know, stick on the roster for a little while. And again, that starts with, you know, their command and fastball command. There's definitely two interesting names to keep an eye on, especially in like deeper dynasty formats.
Your Boston Red Sox designated Joely Rodriguez for assignment. That made room for Naoyuki Uesawa to be recalled from the minors. This is not really a holds play, as Uesawa started all three of the games he appeared in AAA so far, but he is a guy that's going to pitch multiple innings out of the bullpen. We'll probably get a few spot starts, but he's someone who interests me mostly because he's shiny new toy. He came over from Japan. This is his first year in the States. He is 30 years old, but I think he does have the stuff to actually be good stateside. I remember when he signed with the Rays this offseason, we discussed how Eno Saris mentioned that he has a good IVB on his fastball, and that made him somewhat interesting because the team stateside could help him throw that pitch upstairs and make it something that's actually a dominant pitch. So he could go from a guy that was a Toby in Japan, more of a pitch to contact guy, to be a guy who's striking out a lot of batters stateside. And so far, 26.2% strikeout rate at AAA. That's somewhat intriguing.
Yeah, I think he would mention, like, if he was to turn into a reliever full time, hopefully the velo would go up, which You know, he made his debut today. He only threw four fastballs, but, you know, average at 90.5 miles per hour.
90.5?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So, I know. He's threw the splitter 12 times. That seems to be his go-to pitch. You know, he looked okay. Nothing really. He's someone to keep an eye on, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't really know what the role is going to be with him or how long he's going to be up, because I know, you know, a couple of those starters are expected back in the next week or so. So, he probably won't stick around for long, but yeah, it's worth keeping an eye on, seeing where, you know, what his progression looks like at AAA. If you're in deeper AL leagues, or, you know, just looking to see how he turns out. 'Cause yeah, his off-speed stuff's very intriguing. It's just the fastball is so pedestrian, but yeah, I think he did have a good, you know, IVB on it, and you know, that does help it play up a little bit.
Yeah, so that'll be something to keep.
If only he was a lefty, he'd be fine. Yeah, I think he'd be all right.
Yeah. Well, that'll be someone to keep an eye on. Uwasawa there in Boston, I like him in leagues where your starts are limited and he can throw multiple innings out of the bullpen, but definitely wait a little to see if he's somebody we can trust. The Royals option Will Klein to the minors. He was someone we were interested when he first got called up because of his prospect potential, but he tossed just one inning and now he's back down. And now Colin Selby is up. The Royals acquired Selby from the Pirates. I think it was in the offseason. It was this year. He did not pitch well since going over to Kansas City, but he was a guy in the past that has shown big strikeout numbers. We saw in 2023, 24 innings, he struck out 26.3% of batters. He's had strikeout rates north of 30% in the minor leagues as well. The Royals bullpen is very, very shallow, so anybody with some hint of potential has a shot at climbing those ranks. Do you think Colin Selby is that guy, or are you writing him off?
No, that's someone to keep an eye on. I mean, this bullpen is so old, and like, I mean, Tyler Duffy, I didn't even realize he's been in that bullpen.
Remember that one year?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that we always had that one year. But yeah, like Duffy, Will Smith, Nick Anderson, and Stratton, those guys just aren't really, it's really just been Schreiber and MacArthur carrying this bullpen. So, I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, room for someone to take over as a, you know, secondary setup option here. Selby's always kind of been intriguing when he was with Pittsburgh. Good stuff. Just, again, it's, you know, a lot of other factors that have led to him not having success. So maybe I don't really trust the Royals to be the team to figure things out with them, but maybe they do. Maybe something clicks with them here. So yeah, worth keeping an eye on. But yeah, this is a guy who can throw upper 90s. So I mean, if they can get him right, there's definitely this bullpen needs another option to rely on.
Yeah, and it's an upper 90s sinker, so a little bit of movement on that pitch, too. Hopefully he can be a ground ball guy, maybe akin to Jason Foley or Clay Holmes. That's like the peak you're looking for with somebody like Selby, right? But definitely has the stuff there to make it. The next one we have is Ciano Perez of the Orioles, who was activated from the 15-day IL after being out with a right oblique strain. Dylan Tate was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And Perez should climb right into hold situations. And we saw in his first game back, he got a hold. So I don't know. Are we considering Perez again this year? Last year was sort of somewhat of a breakout campaign for the Southpaw, but the Baltimore bullpen is, you know, pretty solid in terms of the top end guys, and Danny Coulomb's pretty locked into that left-handed pitcher role. Is Ciano Perez somebody that we should be targeting?
I think you don't need to target him right now. I still think Aiken's better too as the second lefty. And Jacob Webb's pitched pretty well. There's other guys there. I guess if Kimbrel ends up on the IL, which doesn't sound like he will be, maybe that shortens things up and makes Perez more of an option. But yeah, I don't think he's not someone really worth chasing right now. No.
All right. We got a big return this past week. Yoan Duran was activated from the 15-day IL by the Twins. Matt Bowman was designated for assignment in a corresponding move and was subsequently claimed by the Arizona Diamondbacks. But Duran is back. That means he will be the closer in Minnesota. He got a save in his first game back. He looked pretty solid while doing so. This means Griffin Jackson, Brock Stewart, and Caleb Thielbar all fall down the high leverage ladder there in Minnesota. Duran should get the majority of the saves, probably like 80%, 75%. And Griffin Jacks will be the high leverage reliever going forward. He'll get the saves when Duran is resting and should be the top guy for holds. But I don't think this really changes the fantasy value of anybody here.
No, I mean, for save only leagues, I guess Jacks doesn't need to be rostered anymore.
I mean, he's still pretty solid in like a weekly head to head league. His ratios and strikeouts and you know, the occasional save can be pretty valuable.
Sure. Yeah. If there's, you know, if you don't have anything better, which there aren't a ton of good options out there right now. So yeah, I could see that making sense, but in save plus hold, yeah, it doesn't really change much. I think, you know, Jackson Stewart are the guys that you want outside of Duran. And after that, it's kind of a toss-up between, you know, Thielbar, Okert, and Sands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but great to have Duran back because his high-octane stuff is very fun to watch. Yeah. And we're already down a couple top relievers, so having Duran back should make us feel a little more comfortable, especially when you're doing those closer ranks. Having another guy in that top tier has got to feel a little good.
Yeah, it's someone you just know you don't have to worry about. It's, you know, he should be a locked-in top five closer the rest of the year.
Yeah, he will be great for fantasy teams. All right, left-handed pitcher Kyle Nelson of the Diamondbacks was transferred to the 60-day IL. He underwent thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. Brandon Hughes was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. The team also optioned Andrew Salfrank to the minors and recalled Blake Walston. I think Walston's going to be gone when Ryan Nelson returns probably sometime this weekend or early next week. But Brandon Hughes should be the second left-handed option in that Arizona bullpen going forward. I remember when there was a time when he was going to be the Cubs closer, or he actually never saved a game for them. Oh, wait. I was looking at the wrong call. 8 games. Yeah, I was looking at game started. He actually did start a game already because he was used as an opener. But yeah, it's been a while since we were really considering Hughes as a guy that's going to be impactful fantasy-wise, but he's still just 28 years old, and maybe after overcoming a bunch of injuries, he can come back. This is a guy that dealt with plenty of injuries over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, the slider has always been very, I mean, the slider's really good. So he's always intrigued me. I think there's, you know, there's opportunity here for sure with, you know, Nelson being out for the year. And then, I mean, yeah, there's just, this bullpen's another one where it's, you know, I could see anyone potentially coming up and taking, working their way into a high leverage role right away. So, you know, they're relying on Ryan Thompson and Joe Mantiply, who hasn't been good for the most part. So, yeah, I think there's a chance Hughes could overtake Mantiply here.
And lastly, right-handed pitcher Abner Uribe of the Brewers was optioned to the minors. He just got in a big altercation with Jose Siri and the Rays. So that's probably one factor, but another factor is likely his 6.91 ERA and his declining performances since that really hot first week of the season. I think in general, Trevor McGill and Joel Piamps are pretty safe in that co-closer role, and this should provide them even more save and holds opportunities. But who else in that bullpen do you see rising in the wake of Uribe's demotion?
I mean, Elvis Pregueiro has been pitching more high leverage. Yeah, he's not very exciting either, but he's been working, and he's going to get holds. He's, you know, not going to break your ratios. He's just not going to get a lot of strikeouts. Brian Hudson definitely moves up, your guy. Yeah. I think he might be, I mean, they might trust him more than Hobie Milner at this point. It's kind of tough to tell, but I mean, the way they've been using Hudson's also interesting with him working multiple innings. So maybe they like him in that kind of early game, multiple inning role more. But yeah, those are the two, you know, Hudson, Pugueiro, and yeah, Milner, throw him in there too, because he's always been pretty he's been pretty steady for them for a couple of years now. So, it's really the McGill Piamps show, and then, you know, from there, it's those other three factor in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I checked in on Devin Williams periodically to see, you know, what kind of timeline we're working at. It looks like he's not going to be back until after the All-Star break. So Pyramson and McGill should be, I think, universally rostered right now until Williams is back.
Yeah, I'd agree.
All right. Next, we will discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks. But first, we're going to take a quick break. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We have now entered the three up, three down phase of the podcast where we discuss the relievers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. We'll start with the guys going up the ranks, leading off with Clay Holmes, who has continued to be very, very solid this year, leading the American League in saves. He's got 10. I think he's tied for the major league lead with Ryan Helsley. Zero ERA still across 15 innings. And he's just been very trustworthy, and the Yankees trust him to pitch the ninth inning. They turn to him basically every single time. Only four other saves have been gotten by other Yankees relievers, but majority of them going to Holmes. And I think the Yankees are one of the best teams in baseball right now, so I don't think this is going to slow down, at least until Holmes starts to slow down.
Yeah, and the other night, I mean, against the Orioles, he kind of showed a little bit of a, you know, that was like vintage Clay Holmes, like swing and miss stuff that we hadn't really seen in a while.
Mm-hmm. You saw those pitching ninja gifts?
Yeah. So, and then what Brandon Hyde said about him.
What did he say?
Just like, you know, how his stuff was unhittable tonight. And I mean, it starts though with that 1.6% walk rate with me. And that's, I mean, it's obviously not, all right, it's not obvious, but it's not going to stay there. But, no.
That 0% home run, yeah, fly ball rate. Yeah,
that has saved him because he has been letting up hits, and that's my concern with him. Still, is, you know, a lot of ground balls, a lot of contact. Without the shift, those ground balls are going to be, you know, more likely to be hit. So, you know, the swing and miss stuff is nice to see when it does come out. I wish it was a little bit more, but he's still been super solid and just in the, you know, closer climate right now, it's, you know, he's one of the top 12 guys in the game for sure. So yeah, hoping he can, you know, get a little bit more swing and miss and keep the walk rate down, but can't complain with what he's done so far.
Definitely not. That's Clay Holmes. Next one we've got is James McArthur of the Royals. He did not start the year out as the closer, but he claimed that role pretty early on, and now he's just run with it. 2.63 ERA on the season. He's got 7 saves, and despite John Schreiber pitching really well in a setup role, looks like McArthur might hold this role for the entirety of the season. And he's got great skills across the board. He's top 15 in PLV, top 10 in CSW, really good command guy as well, who strikes out a decent amount of batters. But I think McArthur is somebody that we can trust a lot more. We only saw a small sample last year, and despite the success, there was a hint of, oh, we don't know this guy. This is a reliever with a small sample size. He's on the Royals. We don't know how much we can trust him. But I think at this point, after what we've seen from him in the second half of last year and to start this year, I think he's a guy that we can trust as a pretty solid reliever.
Yeah, I mean, it's another guy with a 3.6% walk rate right now. Love to see that. He's really, you know, like we mentioned before with the Royals, he and Schreiber to some degree have been carrying that bullpen. At some point, they're going to need to get some help for McArthur because he can't keep doing this all year long. But I mean, he's been so good for them. And I don't really have anything. I'm trying to find like things to nitpick about, and like he's let up a lot of hits, but like
his BABIP is high.
Yeah, BABIP is pretty high. I think he'll be fine. I think that WHIP will come down from 1.17. So yeah, if anyone able to pick him up, I mean, you got lucky. I think he's going to be a keeper for the rest of the year.
Totally. That's James McArthur. And lastly, we've got Kirby Yates, who continues to dominate in the ninth inning. He's got a pristine ERA, 0 across the first 12 innings of his season. He's up to 5 saves now as well, striking out a ton of batters, looking like vintage Kirby Yates despite his advanced age. I have a feeling that he's just going to hold this until he inevitably breaks down, and that's more likely given his age and past injury history. But he's not really a guy that really has those small injuries that'll knock you out for 15 days or so. He had the one, I think it must have been Tommy John surgery, where he missed a full year. But other than that, Kirby Yates is somebody that's pretty reliable. And despite being 37, that's like the only knock against him.
Yeah, I mean, I do. He of the three on the up list, I do have some not concerns, but I would say he's most likely to not be closing by the end of the year. Totally. But he's been so good so far. He hasn't allowed a run. He's got a 0.5 whip, 33% strikeout rate. The walk rate at 7%. That's fine. That's, you know, for him, anything under 10%
half of last year.
Yeah, anything under 10% for him. There. Yeah. So there's no complaints here, but I do wonder if he's going to be able to keep this up. He's getting a lot of, you know, he's getting a lot of chase. His zone percentage is pretty good. He's been around the zone. He's getting ahead of counts. But yeah, I do, you know, either the Rangers are going to go out and find someone else to be their closer, or Yates is just going to go through a stretch where he's walking a bunch of guys, or he's just, you know, something's going on. So I do have a little bit of a concern with him, but yeah, he's still worth, you know, rostering everywhere, obviously, at this point, and to just, you know, ride it out for as long as he's, you know, pitching well.
Yeah. Strikeout and walk rates generally stabilize really fast, but even with relievers, sample sizes can be so small that things can turn on a dime. And despite him cutting his walk rate in half, this is still a guy that could just go completely the other way and start walking guys again, just go back to his normal self. I mean, he's 37. He's been the same guy for the last few years. But he also has been really lucky in terms of BABIP, which is at 120. He has not allowed a home run, obviously. He's got a zero ERA, and he's got a 100% left on base rate, obviously, because he has a zero ERA. But still, I think if you look at the holy trinity of equating luck, the hotel, as Nick has deemed it,
right,
he's been clearly very, very lucky. So that's going to turn around at some point. The real question is, how much does it turn around? Is he a guy that reverts to being a bad reliever, or is he a guy that reverts to being still a pretty solid guy? And because he's already locked in the role, Bruce Bochy's not going to remove him.
Yeah, I mean, his xFIP right now is at 2.83. That feels about right. I feel like he's probably like a 3.3 ERA, 1.2 WHIP type of reliever who, you know, that probably is fine for them at least up until the trade deadline, if that's what they can give him, if that's what he gives them. So, yeah, I think, you know, I don't know. Leclerc's been pitching better lately too, and you know, David Robertson's pitched well also. Oh, yeah. I'm Josh sure Spores they're going
to back.
Spores is back. They're going to go after someone at the deadline. So yeah, it's just, you know, it's going to be always, even if as well as Yates has been pitching, it's just always going to be like, you know, who's the next guy in line in Texas, just because of how things have been going for them the last 2 years.
That's Kirby Yates, and those are our risers. As closers rise the ranks, others fall down the ranks, and we'll talk about those now. Craig Kimbrel is falling down the ranks. He had a couple appearances where he did not look right, and honestly, it was bittersweet to see that he was dealing with an injury, because in one sense, you're like, oh man, the closer for my fantasy baseball team, or maybe my favorite team if you're an Orioles fan, is out with an injury. But on the other hand, this is a guy who was so good for the first few weeks of the season, and then just out of nowhere, against the A's for that matter, just struggled across consecutive appearances, and he just did not look like the same pitcher. And I did not know how to explain it, but this injury explains it. And so I feel a little better knowing that there is something behind this, and that it's not just regression or something else hitting him. Are you concerned with Kimbrel in terms of this injury, or do you think this is going to be something where you know, it's a minor thing, and then he's back and it's all solved? Or do you think this could be something that causes him to, you know, pitch worse, especially with that reduced fastball velocity?
Yeah, I'm not overly concerned, I guess, with the injury itself. It's just the usage was, I mean, he was just going, before he, you know, got hurt, or the day after he got hurt, I heard something about his, you know, he's on pace for like the most innings pitched in his career since, I think 2014 it was. Like,
that the case last year?
I mean, yeah, I think he has the same amount of innings so far as he did in April of last year. And
oh, no.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and that's, that was kind of always the thing. And it was always, you know, the Orioles are going to obviously be good and win games. So there's going to be a lot of save opportunities here, which is like good and bad for him. Cause I just don't know if he can handle every single one at this point of his career. Mm-hmm. I don't think that makes sense. And they don't need him to. They obviously can turn to Cano or Coulomb, you know, any given day. I mean, Coulomb's been so freaking good this year. Mm-hmm. Cano's looked good too. So I there's just, you know, no reason to rush Kimbrel into, you know, this early in the season. There's no reason for him to be pitching as much as he has. So that said, I mean, yeah, the velo is still down. He did just have two terrible outings against the A's, and you know, if it's a back injury, it could be a nagging thing throughout the year. Yeah. And just, you know, the more he pitches, or maybe it's, you know, sometimes it's, you know, guys just not being in rhythm and like, you know, sitting down a couple games and then all of a sudden they have to throw the next, it just, you know, you never know if, you know, especially someone his age. So, yeah, it's concerning. It's not, you know, I'm not saying to go drop Kimbrel or anything, but yeah.
Trade him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you might have missed the window, but yeah, if you can trade him, sure. But I think he'll be fine for the most part. I just don't know if he's going to be, you know, a top 12 reliever this year.
Yeah, I think the biggest concern we have is that usage is just super high, because last year he was so good the whole year, and then in the final month he fell apart, and we all blamed it on fatigue. And it makes sense, because he's in his mid-30s, he's pitched so many innings in his career, and he's just being used more than ever now, which is sort of crazy. We were sort of fingers crossed that he wouldn't pitch at that same rate this year, maybe still a lot, but not as often as he did last year. But so far that hasn't been the case, and maybe it's already taken a toll on him early in the season. Looks like Cano, as you mentioned, and Coulomb should be getting the majority of these saves in Kimbrel's absence, but we did see Jacob Webb get one, but that was likely because both Cano and Coulomb had pitched on back-to-back days prior to that. So I think Cano and Coulomb will be the top options there. You can probably pick them up, but it's going to be pretty temporary, I think, especially because Kimbrel wasn't placed on the injured list and looks to be day to day, so he could return literally any day. But that will be something to keep an eye on with Kimbrel. But we can move on to Michael Kopech in Chicago, who is sort of the mirror image of Mason Miller in terms of a guy going from starter to closer and starting the season out as a multi-inning guy to landing as the team's closer. However, Kopech has not really been used in the ninth inning. It feels like the White Sox have so few wins. Well, I know they have so few wins. It feels like they have so few wins because they're bad. I literally just lost my train of thought, but I'm back on it. They have so few wins, and then they're like, we have to secure this win. They sort of start freaking out. Yeah. So they go to their top guy, Michael Kopech, in the eighth inning, because they're like, we cannot let this get away from us. We're going to lock this up now. So that sort of suggests that Kopech is a high leverage reliever. But honestly, I just don't even know what they're doing, because they're just doing anything they can to get a win.
Well, it's the White Sox. That's their motto. Exactly. I don't know what we're doing, but we're trying to do anything.
we're trying to win.
Yeah. I mean, it's so weird. I mean, because I was kind of like, oh, I get it. Like, yeah, they'll use Kopech as the closer who comes in the eighth inning and, you know, goes the eighth and the ninth. And they did it like twice. And it was like, this isn't really working. And, you know, at this point, just, you look, learn from the A's. The A's are just using Mason Miller in the ninth. Just let Kopech go in the ninth inning, throw 100 miles per hour instead of, you know, trying, you know, Steven Wilson and Dominic Leon. I mean, this bullpen's not good. It's no one is good in this bullpen except for Michael Kopech. And I don't know. I just don't know. It's the usage. And I mean, Kopech hasn't pitched that well. It's he's got a 1.29 whip, and you know, he has had some issues and whatnot, but I mean, he definitely has the best stuff. It's not even close. Highest strikeout rate, and that's not even close at all. He's got a 34.8% K rate. The second highest is 22 by Davey Garcia, who I believe
Tanner Banks is at 24.
Tanner Banks. Okay. Mine's not updated. It's got him at 20%. So yeah, I mean, it's just, he should be solely in the ninth, and there's not going to be a ton of ninth inning chances, obviously, with this team, but I just want to see him pitch well for one inning and get some saves. And they should too, because that's their only, it's not their only, I mean, they don't even have a ton of trade, you know, chips at this point. So you would think that Kopech would be a guy like, hey, maybe we can, you know, get something for him at the deadline if he pitches well as a closer here. But yeah, it's not really going that way. I'm sure teams are interested in him though as a reliever.
I mean,
they'll get calls. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing with Kopech is like, it's one thing if he's being used like this on another team, because I don't know, we'd be able to handle it. But the fact that he's on the White Sox and they're doing this, they're going to have so few win chances that when they do, and it's in a save opportunity, and then they don't use Kopech as the closer, it's like there's just one more of the maybe 30 save opportunities they get on the year. So yeah, that's going to be really frustrating all year long. Obviously, this is a manager thing, so it could flip on a dime. We could see Kopech being used in the ninth going forward. But I have a feeling that they're just going to keep messing around because the White Sox are a very weirdly run organization. Jordan Leisure got the last save, and while he was very hyped in the offseason, the strikeouts have not been there. I don't think he's going to be somebody that winds up in the ninth as Kopech as the high leverage guy.
Yeah, he hasn't been good this year. I mean, yeah, it's you know, it should be Kopech or bust, but I don't know. Whatever the White Sox are going to do whatever they want to do. It's not going to make any sense. We just have to get over it.
All right. And lastly, we've got Alexis Diaz in Cincinnati. He's been fine this year. 3.75 ERA. He's got six saves. He's got a 25.5% strikeout rate, though none of it really feels sustainable. After last year's rough second half with the Reds, Diaz was a guy that both Rick and I were staying away from in fantasy drafts because we weren't totally sure that he would be able to replicate the first half. We weren't sure which pitcher Diaz actually was. There were plenty of arguments around the industry discussing Diaz's fatigue as the season wore on. He had never really pitched a full season like that. But here he is in his second full season, and while he is having success, I don't think it's completely deserved, and it does feel like this could come crashing down at any moment.
Yeah, I mean, he's looked more like his second half self this year, and you know, 13.7% walk minus K rate or K minus walk rate, 4.51% xFIP, 9% swinging strike rate. You know, all bottom five amongst active closers right now. You know, they're still pretty good. His slider is good. The fastball is fringy. I think PLV has a lower grade. Stuff Plus likes his fastball, so that's an interesting one. But I just, you know, I don't know if his fastball is good enough to be you know, and make him an elite closer at this point. I think he's a fine. I don't know if he's like, how much better is he than like Carlos Estevez? I mean,
they're very similar.
Yeah, it's like not that far off from him at this point. So, yeah, I mean, he hasn't hurt anyone, and you know, he hasn't done anything, you know, worth making him droppable, or you know, no blowups really so far. But it's just the underlying stuff is not looking great.
He and Estevez were very similar until Estevez figured out how to not walk anybody, which I don't know, is mixed returns there. 6.23 ERA and 0% walk rate. Maybe throw a little bit out of the zone, but we're talking about Alexis Diaz. And I think I'm in the same boat where it's like, yeah, it's more likely that he holds on to the role the whole season. And maybe there's a month where he's just terrible, and that's all it takes to remove him from the role. I think it will be heavily dependent on how good the Reds are this season. But I would love to see Fernando Cruz take over that role. He's been really dominant in terms of striking out a lot of guys. His 4.63 ERA is not ideal, but he's got a 45.8% strikeout rate, and he's got maybe the most devastating splitter in all of baseball. The Reds are currently over 500, so this could be, in a couple months, a situation where the Reds do move on from Diaz because they are in the hunt. But he's going to have to do a lot worse for them to consider that.
Yeah, I mean, that Cruz ERA, that was all from last night. He let up he let up four earned runs. I think it was a grand slam to Jake Cronenworth, So, yeah, well, I mean, it's going to happen, but that's, exactly. It's one game. Hopefully he can bounce back from that.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But those are our risers and fallers. To recap, the guys climbing up the ranks, Clay Holmes, James MacArthur, and Kirby Yates. And the guys falling down the ranks, Craig Kimbrell, Michael Kopech, and Alexis Diaz. Next, we will discuss our main topic, fastball velocity, the leaderboards, and the risers and fallers in that category. But first, we're going to take a quick break. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We have entered the main topic section of our podcast, and today we're going to be discussing fastball velocity. We'll run through the leaderboards in terms of the best fastballs, four-seamers, sinkers, and cutters, and then we'll talk about some four-seam fastballs, improvers, and decliners. I don't think this is surprising, but there are about maybe 10 times more fallers than there are risers, but I think that's expected. But let's start with the highest average four-seam fastball velocity. According to Baseball Savant, this is minimum 100 pitches and is just amongst relievers. Number one, no surprise, Mason Miller, 100.7 miles per hour. He has been so crazy this year. My brother has him in our fantasy league, and he's just always talking about him. I sent him a tweet yesterday. It's from Codify, and it says a complete list of every pitcher in MLB history to have 8 saves and 20 strikeouts in any span of 8 regular season games. Mason Miller.
Really?
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's been historically dominant across the past month, and that's really exciting. I know you already have him in your top 10. I think if he was off the A's, do you think he's a top 5 guy?
Yeah. I mean, it's really just the 8. And I mean, the A's are playing fine. I think it's hard to figure out how to rank him because it's the A's. But it's tempting to like push him up a little bit more even because he is, realistically the best reliever in baseball right now.
Right.
Pure skill standpoint. Mm-hmm. It's just the A's being the A's. But yeah, I mean, it's just no matter what, it feels good to roster him at this point. He's so fun. He's such a dominating force back there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's I'm tempted to move him up in the top 5. It's just it's the A's. I don't know. I'm trying to get a read on them. It's hard because they're sneaking around, beating some good teams. But I don't know if I believe the lineup and rotation will hold up. I guess yeah.
No, that lineup is absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
You do not have to worry about the A's being good this year. Their leadoff hitter right now is batting 185. So, I don't think we need to worry about the A's suddenly becoming contenders in their final year in Oakland. But I think Mason Miller is going to be super fun all year long, and I'm really glad he's proven me wrong thus far. As we move down the list, Abner Uribe is number 2 at 100.1 miles per hour. He was just optioned to the minors, unfortunately. Next on the list, though, Justin Martinez, 99.6 mile per hour average, four-seam fastball velocity. He's a guy who's interested me since I learned about him. Just a guy that throws 100 miles per hour is always pretty interesting. Right. He sort of walks too many guys, though, and that can really cause a lot of troubles. But I don't think that Diamondback's bullpen is going to prevent him from climbing up the ranks. Like right now, Bryce Jarvis is their number 2, right? Or I guess he'll be their number 3 when Paul Sewald returns. But there's definitely room for Martinez to move up the holds ladder in Arizona. I just don't know if they're going to push him that hard because I feel like they've handled him with kid's gloves so far, and he is still 22, so it's warranted.
Yeah, with him, it's just, again, he's another one of these. He's, 22. It's walk rate and just, command issues. His stuff is crazy good. The fastball and look at the slider too. It's got a 41.2% whiff rate. Splitter's got a 50% whiff rate. It's just the command of the fastball and not walking people. That's once he starts doing that, he'll be, a full-time reliever. And yeah, this could be their closer of the future. I mean, Ginkle's there for another 2 years, I think. After that, maybe Justin Martinez time. It just again, we just want to, Uribe showed some flashes, you know, Ebner showed some flashes of having some good command, and then it kind of, you know, went, you know, just disappeared on him recently. So, just consistency from Martinez. That's all we're looking for. Hopefully we can, you know, hopefully he sticks in the bullpen at least. Like, just let him work things out there, maybe, even if it's in low leverage spots, just to, you know, get a feel for, you know, the major league bullpen.
Totally. Ryan Helsley is next on the list at 99.3 miles per hour. He's looked incredible this year, and I think he's like back to just being 2022 Ryan Helsley again, where he's just been unhittable. 1.69 ERA. The strikeout rate isn't as high as it was in 2022, but he's made up for it by cutting his walk rate down to 3.2%. And there's not much to suggest that he's been super lucky thus far. He's got a 2.68 xFIP, a 1.15 xERA. Ryan Helsley looking like one of the most dominant closers in baseball, and he's tied for the major league lead with 10 saves.
Yeah, he's been him and Class A have been, you know, the best two reliever or best two closers in baseball outside of Mason Miller. And I do think I'm tempted to move both of them up over Edwin Diaz. Maybe it happens next week because Diaz hasn't exactly been himself so far. He's been fine. He just hasn't been, you know, 2022 Edwin Diaz. So Helsley and Class A have just been so good. And Helsley is in, you know, especially was, you know, I wasn't sure the velo would be like where it is right now. I thought he might be sitting around 90, especially with the spring, you know, that was a concern. And he did say, he was like, hey, you know, I'm just kind of taking it easy here. And that thankfully that was the case because, yeah, he's been lights out so far this year. That's the one thing, you know, between Helsley and Romero and Kittredge, that's the one thing the Cardinals got going for him right now.
Yep. All right, next we got Michael Kopech, who's at 98.8 miles per hour. And then we got Andrés Muñoz and Ryan Stanek back-to-back, 98.6 miles per hour and 98.5 miles per hour, respectively. And then after that, Joe Kelly at 98.5 miles per hour on his four-seamer. I don't know what it is with him, but it's like he cannot avoid being unlucky. He's got a 4.06 BABIP, his ERA is at 5.25, and yet he's got a 3.62 xFIP. It's higher than it has been the last few years, but I mean, I don't know what it is about Joe Kelly, but despite having incredible stuff, usually great strikeout numbers and seeming like a guy that should be dominant, he can't do it. I don't know what it is.
At some point, it's got to be like, all right, maybe he's not unlucky, maybe he's just super hittable. Like, yeah, I don't, yeah, we might be past that point at this, you know, where we are now, but
yeah,
it's frustrating because, I mean, yeah, the stuff, the fastball, the breaking stuff, it's all great, gets swings and misses at a good rate, but I don't know. We'll, I'm still kind of, you know, I don't have Kelly out inside the top 30 for holds, but I still think he's worth keeping an eye on just because if he does turn that switch, the upside is, you know, huge here.
Next, we have Lucas Erceg from the A's. He's throwing his fastball at 98.5 miles per hour. He looked like he could be the team's closer heading into the season before Mason Miller took over, and he's pretty interesting. I saw you wrote about him, though, in one of your articles. What did you have to say about Erceg?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot better than last year, obviously. I am intrigued with what he's got going on this year. He's been, you know, one of the better setup guys in baseball. I do have some, you know, concerns outside of, you know, the fastball velocity has always been there, but I do wonder, you know, it's another guy with command issues that he's been fine so far, but I just, you know, wonder, you know, I want to see a little bit more of it before I put him into like, you know, a top 20 holds situation. And again, it's also the A's where it's like, we don't know.
Yep.
You know, how many holds are going to be there at any given time. So there might be some cold, you know, weeks where you're not getting anything from him. So he's been really good, part of that duo, but you know, with Mason Miller. But yeah, I don't, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic here, I guess that's the word to use.
All right. Next, we've got Trevor Megill at 98.5 miles per hour, and then Robert Suarez at 98.3 miles per hour. And I totally understand why he's turning to this pitch so much. He's added half a mile per hour, and he's increased the usage on his four-seamer 41%. That is absolutely ridiculous. The pitch has performed really well. Its IVB is really good. And it's been a dominant pitch for him thus far. I don't think he's going to be able to keep up his 0.71 ERA, especially when he's sporting a 23% strikeout rate. But Robert Suarez locked into the closer role in San Diego thanks to his overpowering fastball.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. You talked about kind of a lot. Who was it we were talking about that, you know, up their slider usage? And, you know, that's usually what you see with, you know, when guys are having success. It's like, oh, their slider or changeup usage went up. But with, yeah, Suarez, it's his fastball usage. And it's because it's a really good pitch. Yeah. I mean, it checks out when you're throwing 98.3. Yeah. Throw that.
And then
more.
Maybe. Yeah, definitely. 100%. Maybe the most unknown guy on the list, Thiago Vieira of the Brewers, has been throwing his fastball at 98.2 miles per hour. There's nothing else that really stands out in terms of Vieira, but he also doesn't throw that four-seamer that much. He's mostly a sinker guy, so he's usually sitting around 96. So he's sort of an outlier here in terms of four-seam fastball velocity. Next is Emmanuel Clase at 98.1 miles per hour. We all know him. Gregory Soto at 98.1 miles per hour as well. He's been one of the top setup options in Philadelphia for the past couple of years, and he continues to struggle. 6.52 ERA on the year. The strikeouts aren't there, but the velocity is there. Do you think this is a guy that can turn it around, or do you think those walks are just hurting him too much?
Yeah, I mean, that's the old, this is like the old Gregory Soto issue with the walks. And we thought, you know, the Phillies may have turned a corner with Soto and Alvarado. And like now all of a sudden this year, it's like those guys are regressing. Yeah, those guys are going back to where they were pre-Philly
tenure. Which guy
did
they fire?
I know. It's really interesting to find that out. Something happened. And Sir Anthony Dominguez can't do anything right. I mean, yeah, the bullpen is all of a sudden an issue for them. So I don't know. I think Soto's obviously the talent's there for him to figure out and turn things around. But right now, it's not someone you want to really roster in holds leagues unless it's a really deep league.
And then rounding out the four-seam fastball velocity leaderboard, Jason Foley's at 98 miles per hour. We all know he's more of a sinker guy and he throws that sinker really hard. But I think most notably is the fact that this was a guy who was sitting 100 at the very beginning of the season. And we were getting a little bit of excitement considering he was a low strikeout guy in 2023. And maybe the increased fastball velocity would help him reach a new level in the strikeout department. That has not been the case as his fastball velocity has fallen. And so with it, his strikeout rate. Do you think we need to be reducing our expectations for Foley going forward?
Yeah, I think the expectations got to a kind of a crazy level at one point. Mm-hmm. But I still think he's a really good reliever. He's more of a, even with the, you know, increased velo and the 98 miles per hour, it's more of a Toby of relievers, of closers. But yeah, he's still fine. You still want to roster him everywhere. I don't think the upside's there for him to be a top 10 guy.
Totally. All right, we will move over to the highest average sinker velocity. This is still on Baseball Savant, minimum 100 pitches among relievers. Justin Martinez leads off the list at 99.8 miles per hour. And then Aroldis Chapman at 99.7 miles per hour. He was noticeably absent from the four-seam fastball list, and that's because he's seen a massive drop in velocity. And while he's still seeing that in his sinker, it doesn't matter because he's just that good. 99.7 miles per hour on the sinker. Nonetheless, he has struggled this year with a 6 ERA across 9 innings, and that's because he's walked a quarter of the batters he's faced, and that will not play. I don't know. This is sort of how Chapman is, right? Like you mentioned in your article, he's a cherry bomb. He's going to have times where he cannot control his pitches, and despite how good they are, people will just not swing, and then he's just going to give up free passes, and then the home runs will really hurt his ERA.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly like the picture perfect, you know, cherry bomb, I guess, from, you know, I know Nick uses that for starters, but I mean, he's just 2 weeks. You're going to get, you know, great outings from him where, you know, no hits or runs allowed and 13 strikeouts. And then the next 2 weeks, he's going to walk 7 guys and give up 6 runs. And it's just hard. It's just got to be the most frustrating, you know, guy to roster. It's so headache inducing. The stuff's still there. It's still, he's still getting swings and misses, but it's just, it's not worth the, I don't know if he's worth the headache for most leagues.
Next on the list is Abner Uribe at 98.7 miles per hour at the same velocity, Lucas Erceg. And then we got Nick Birdie at 98.7 miles per hour. He got injured though. He was pitching for the Yankees and he was somewhat interesting when he was healthy, but now he's injured and he's a guy who's oft injured, mostly because he throws so hard, but maybe when he returns, he can be a guy to keep an eye on because he throws so hard. Trevor McGill next on the list at 98.6. Then we have a pretty steep drop off to Andrés Muñoz at 98, Joe Kelly at 98, Robert Suarez 97.9, and then Jose Alvarado at 97.9. We have not discussed Alvarado much this year, and I think that's mostly because he's, he's been underwhelming, but then he's also the closer, so it's not like there's anything actionable we can do and from a fantasy sense. But he does have a 4.63 ERA, though he has seen his strikeout rate fall from 37% all the way down to 25%. And it seems warranted given his sub 10% swinging strike rate.
Yeah, I don't know. All of a sudden he can't miss bats anymore. I don't know like what has happened here. It's super frustrating. Part of it, could be this is a decrease in velo for him a little bit. But I think it's more, I don't know. It's just hitters have kind of maybe the books out on him now and they've learned to lay off some of his stuff. So yeah, the walk rate's all of a sudden back up to 13.5%. And that's even for his career, that's kind of low. But I mean, I would still like to see that under 10%. But yeah, Alvarado, like with Soto, it's like these guys have the talent to figure it out and be really good for long stretches of time. But it's, you know, when is that going to happen, I guess?
Yep. Staying in the Phillies bullpen, Gregory Soto is next at 97.6 miles per hour. And then Sir Anthony Dominguez at 97.4 miles per hour. Adrian Morejon is also at 97.4 miles per hour. And he's pretty interesting as a former top prospect. And he's actually been pretty decent for the Padres thus far, 2.61 ERA and 10 and a third, and he's surprisingly struck out 35.5% of the batters he's faced while walking zero batters. And despite a 1.45 whip, I think we can expect that to go down given his 517 BABIP and the fact he's not walking anybody. I think Morejon should be somebody that we start getting interested in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they demoted Tom Cosgrove as their third lefty, so now Morejon's their third lefty, and honestly, I think he's better. He's definitely better than Wandy Peralta and might be better than Yuki Matsui as well. So, yeah, he's someone to keep an eye on, especially with this increase in velo. It's working well for him right now.
Jason Foley is next at 97.3, and then Daniel Palencia, 97.2, Camilo Duvall, 97.2, and Brock Stewart at 97.1 to wrap up the sinker velocity leaderboards. There are definitely some interesting names on there. We'll wrap up the leaderboards with the highest average cutter velocity. This is a weird pitch considering it's hard for baseball savant to sometimes differentiate between cutters and sliders. So it is crazy when you look at the top two guys on this leaderboard, Camilo Duvall at 99.1, Emmanuel Clase at 98.5. And then we have a more than 4 mile per hour drop all the way down to Brock Stewart at 94.3 miles per hour. And he's nearly a mile an hour above the fourth place guy. So Duvall and Clase sort of set themselves apart. Both of them have been very solid this year. Oh, I did want to mention, I went to the Giants game last weekend. I think it was Friday. And that was the Patrick Bailey walk-off game, which and of itself was incredible. But this was my first time seeing the Camilo Duvall entrance in person. Oh. And it was so sick. It just like, I didn't even realize he was warming up because the game was tied going into the ninth inning. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden the lights go out and I was like, what's going on? And then the lights come back on, but they're orange and Camilo Duvall's running out with all those spotlights. And it was so sick and everyone was so pumped and it like changed the vibe of the game because it had been a scoreless game for eight innings and was about to be for eight and a half. And so it was crazy to see Duvall come out and he got into a jam, but then he got out of it. So that was really cool. The closer entrances are awesome. And the one in San Francisco is incredible, but Duvall looking very solid again. And Clase, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, very solid as well. Brock Stewart, we've had plenty of discussion. Same with David Robertson. Evan Phillips is at 93.3 miles per hour. And he's been a guy that has been very trustworthy again. And I don't really see anybody in that Dodgers bullpen giving him a run for his money. I think the only way he is taken out of that closer role is if the Dodgers bring somebody else in.
Yeah, I mean, Phillips is awesome. He's been great. I no complaints here, no concerns outside of, them going outside the organization to add someone at the deadline. I mean, Phillips has been rock solid.
Yep. And then the last few we have are Jose Alvarado at 93, Michael Grove at 92.5, Yensi Almonte at 92.3, Hunter Stratton at 92.1. I think I looked this up. I don't think he's related to Chris Stratton, which is... sort of weird, but okay. Yeah. Relief pitcher, throws with the right hand, baseball player with the same last name, similar age. Yeah. But maybe I'm misremembering, but I have a feeling I looked it up. Hunter Stratton, though, pretty interesting. 19.2% swinging strike rate overall, and yet a 25% strikeout rate. And this is a guy that looks like he could strike out more than 30% of batters, and he's walked less than 2% of the batters he's faced. I think Hunter Stratton is an under the radar guy to keep an eye on.
Yeah, he's someone that's kind of interesting, especially with there not being a ton of options behind David Bednar there in Pittsburgh. Someone I'm keeping an eye on, not really doing anything with right now, but the slider-cutter mix, slider's got a 70.6% whiff rate. He's only thrown 37 of them, but still, that's pretty crazy number there. So definitely someone to keep an eye on.
All right. And then to wrap up that list, Chris Martin and Kenley Jansen, bullpen mates at 92 miles per hour on their cutter. Now we will talk about improvers and decliners. The improvers are short, but they are impactful. Four-seam fastball improvers from last year to this year. This is amongst guys that had a minimum of 250 pitches in 2023 and a minimum of 100 pitches thus far in 2024. These are all relievers, obviously. Mason Miller is tops on the list, 98.3 miles per hour to 100.7 miles per hour. That's a 2.5 mile per hour jump there. We already talked about Miller, and we already talked about this next guy. Michael Kopech went from 95.2 miles per hour to 98.8 miles per hour on his fastball. That's a jump of 3.5 miles per hour. That's huge. But both of these guys are going from the rotation to the bullpen, so I think it's understandable, but that's sort of where we're finding all of our velocity improvers right now, at least at this part of the season. The last guy we have, Hunter Gaddis, went from 93.4 miles per hour in the rotation to now averaging 96 with his fastball. That's a 2.6 mile per hour increase. Does that make you more interested in Gaddis? I know we've already discussed Gaddis earlier this season, but is he a guy that you're trusting more knowing that the velocity is that significantly up?
Not necessarily that it's that significantly up, but just the stuff plays up when he's in the bullpen. That's what happens typically with these starters turn relievers. So, either way, Gaddis has looked great as a reliever. And if he's living at 96 with the slider changeup mix that he has, he should be fine. That's, he's been great this year so far.
Yeah. So that's the complete list of improvers right now. So we'll move over to the decliners. And there's a lot of names. We'll probably have to skip over the majority of them, but there are some notable ones. Aroldis Chapman on top of the list, who went from 99 miles per hour on his four seamer to 97.1 miles per hour this year. That's minus 1.9 miles per hour. We already talked about Chapman. So we'll go to Pete Fairbanks, who's down from 98.9 miles per hour to 97 miles per hour. That's a minus 1.9 mile per hour difference there for Pete Fairbanks. That's sort of concerning, especially given that he's already on the injured list and struggled to a 9 ERA to start the year. I don't know. It feels terrible asking this, but is it time to hop off the Pete Fairbanks stand train?
Never. No.
Yeah, there we go.
I think once he gets, we'll see what he looks like when he gets back. From the IL, I think. Remember, we were saying the same thing last year, and then he got back in May or June, and was just like one of the better relievers in baseball. So, I think it's just we're probably never gonna get a full great season from Pete Fairbanks, but he's good in spurts. And
oh yeah,
he's just like really good in spurts. So yeah, it's we'll see what he looks like when he comes back here. I think hopefully that velo ticks back up.
Yeah. The thing with Pete Fairbanks is it'd be one thing if he was just like a dominant reliever that was like fun to watch and put up good numbers. But the fact that he has those interviews where it's like anytime he speaks, it's like must watch TV. I'm like, Pete Fairbanks, one of my favorite players.
He's an interesting dude. Every closer is like a weird, interesting dude. Oh, yeah. Either they're crazy or they're like Pete Fairbanks. It's just like, you know, you're going to get a good soundbite usually. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we can move on. Yunior Marte has seen his fastball velocity drop 2.3 miles per hour. Johan Ramirez has seen his fastball velocity drop 3 miles per hour. Jorge Lopez for the Mets has seen his velocity drop from 96.9 miles per hour to 94.7, a drop of 2.2 miles per hour. That's pretty concerning, especially because we discussed earlier the lack of depth in that Mets bullpen, especially with Brooks Raley and Drew Smith on the injured list. And because Jorge Lopez has a 1.80 ERA, 2 saves and 3 holds. But I think given the velocity decline, I'm going to be steering away from him as much as I can.
Yeah, I'm still on not interested in Jorge Lopez and pretty much
never been. Yeah. Never been, never will.
Well, at some point, but just not now, not recently, no.
That one half season. That was right.
Yeah.
That's Jorge Lopez. Next one is Tim Herron, who has seen his fastball velocity decline from 96.6 miles per hour down to 95 miles per hour, difference of 1.6 miles per hour. And he has been a pretty significant part of the Cleveland bullpen and has pitched to a 0.69 ERA, but his fastball velocity is dropping. Does that concern you, or does the results that he's put up sort of trump the fastball decline?
Yeah, not just because the there's a decline in their fastball velocity doesn't necessarily cause any concern. You know, sometimes guys need to, you know, maybe that's, you know, if I lose a mile per hour, I'll have better command of my pitches, and you know, so I'll trade velo for command, I guess, any day for the most part. So
what if I told you his walk rate has jumped?
I was just say his walk rate, his command's still not good. So this is not the case for that.
No,
but just in general, it's generally speaking, I'll take command over, you know, a minus one, you know, mile per hour velo decrease. But yeah, with Herron, he's been pitching so well. It is surprising to see this stuff, the under the hood numbers here, because the walk rate's not great. And it actually makes me feel a little less excited about him.
Yeah, definitely. Next, we've got Yency Almonte for the Cubs, 96 miles per hour to 93.9, a difference of 2.1 miles per hour. And the Cubs have sort of had to rely on him. He's already gotten 6 holds, but it comes with a 4.63 ERA despite a 31.5% strikeout rate. Yency Almonte was a guy that the Dodgers turned into a legit reliever for like half a season before trading him with Michael Busch who did they get? Who was the Michael Busch trade? Who did the Dodgers get from the Cubs?
They got a pitching prospect.
Jackson Ferris.
Yeah, Ferris, yeah.
There we go. Okay. I was like, I cannot think of any major leaguer on their team that is a Cub, but now it makes sense. Yency Almonte is somebody that, if you look at his numbers from 2022 and maybe some other metrics, you can get a little bit excited, but he just walks so many guys, and that's like the biggest thing. Like Rick just said with Tim Herron, it's fine if the fastball velocity is going down, if it means they're improving in other places. That's not the case with Almonte.
Yeah, I still think he's better. He's definitely better than Hector Neris, and he might be better than Mark Leiter still, but it's not great seeing what, you know, is happening with his velo. Especially 96 to 93.9. That's a big drop off. That's a big difference. That's a big difference, yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. Next, we got Craig Kimbrel, who we've discussed a lot, minus 1.9 miles per hour on the fastball. Somewhat concerning, but you know, rewind in the podcast if you forget what we said about Craig Kimbrel. Next is Caleb Ferguson, who's seen his fastball drop from 95.8 miles per hour to 94 miles per hour. It's a 1.8 mile per hour difference. He was supposed to be a big part of the Yankees bullpen, but has struggled to a 4.26 ERA since leaving the Dodgers. I wouldn't say velocity is a huge part of his game, but another thing is his fastball velocity's dropped and his walk rate has risen.
Yeah, he hasn't pitched well this year.
No.
Both of those issues, the velo and the walk rate, definitely a big factor. At least the walk rate. I don't know. The velo, maybe, probably. But he's been pitching a little bit better lately. I wonder if the velo is coming back up as of late. I'd have to check, but he has been a little bit better this past week.
Looks like in his most recent outing, fastball velocity was at 94, which is what he's averaging.
Yeah. No. Okay.
Yeah. Next one we got is Emilio Pagan for the Reds. This one is sort of crazy because I think we were all scared of Emilio Pagan going to Cincinnati in the first place because he's a guy who finds his success by avoiding home runs. And Cincinnati is not the place to go if you want to do that. And while Emilio Pagan has been solid, 3.65 ERA, 28% strikeout rate, he's had just one hold and has seen his fastball velocity decline from 95.8 miles per hour down to 93.8, which is a 2 mile per hour difference. I mean, I'm not touching him with a 10-foot pole. That's crazy. In Great American Ballpark and decreased fastball velocity?
Yeah, no interest there for me either. I'm out.
Yeah, not great. Jake Diekman is next at 95.4 to 93.8 miles per hour. It's a 1.6 mile per hour difference. We'll skip that one because we discussed him earlier. We'll talk about Gabe Spear, who went from 95.1 miles per hour to 93.4. That's a 1.7 mile per hour difference. That one's sort of weird given how good Spear's been this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pitching great, so this doesn't really concern me too much. But yeah, it's worth keeping an eye on seeing how that works for him, you know, later on in the year.
Yeah. All right. We'll go pretty quickly through a few here so we can get to somebody else. Isaiah Campbell's dropped 1.9 miles per hour. Jacob Webb down 2.7 miles per hour, despite having a lot of success for the Orioles. Sean Armstrong down 1.6 miles per hour. And, you know, they really have to rely on him right now because that bullpen is destroyed by injuries. Taylor Scott down 1.6 miles per hour. Giovanni Gallegos down 1.6 miles per hour from 93.7 to 92.1. Gallegos has also looked terrible this year. And I think the Cardinals are fine given that they have Jojo Romero and Andrew Kittredge and Ryan Helsley and Keenan Middleton on the IL, that Gallegos falling off doesn't really hurt them. But I mean, it sort of feels like Gallegos started declining last year and it's sort of continuing into 2024.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know if he's hurt or he's just been really bad. He's had spurts where he's bad before, but this seems different. Something's wrong.
His walk rate has tripled from last year.
Yeah. He's interestingly enough throwing his slider a whole lot more than he has in the past. I don't know if he trusts the fastball or just knows that it's been getting just abused. He's got a 1.071 slug against his fastballs. So
60% ICR.
Yeah, I mean, he was just in 2022, he was 94.3 miles per hour. Now he's down 2.2 miles per hour in 2 years. So
yeah,
concerning for sure. Yeah. And I don't know if he can live at 92. Yeah.
No, might be time to hop off the Giovanni Gallegos train.
Yeah.
For the Nationals, might be time to hop off the Matt Barnes train. Minus 2.1 miles per hour there. He's not looked great. And then we have a trio of guys who didn't pitch last year, but have still seen their velocities decline from the last times we saw them. Anthony Bender from 2022, he pitched 97.6 miles per hour then. Now he's down to 95.5, and he was somebody that was somewhat intriguing coming back from injury, could maybe fit into a high leverage role in Miami, but he has not been able to do that. 8.25 ERA in 12 innings. And I'm sure this fastball velocity isn't the sole cause for that, but Anthony Bender not looking like he did before the injury.
Yeah, it's part of it. And his command has been terrible. And it's what you expect from, I guess, someone coming back from a long absence from Tommy John. Hopefully he can right the ship and get the command and the velo back, but it's probably going to take a while. So yeah, Bender is not really on the radar at this point.
No, he's sort of like a second half guy, I think.
Yeah.
I might start considering them, especially when the Marlins likely trade Tanner Scott away. Then maybe Bender's somebody that we can keep an eye on. Daniel Hudson, who he pitched one inning last year.
Yeah, he threw
three innings.
Yeah.
Yeah. And only 24 in 2022, but that year he had a 97 mile per hour velocity. Now it's down to 95.3, which with all the injuries and him being 37 now, I get it. I understand why it would fall, but has not mattered at all because he doesn't walk anybody anymore. 1.8%.
Yeah, and he could probably be fine. He can probably survive with that velo, because that's not velo, even when it's never been the most important factor in his game. So I think he can make it work at 95.3. Probably not the same strikeout upside, but you know, still a competent reliever here.
A guy who might not be a competent reliever, Tanner Rainey, has returned from a long absence. He was throwing 96.2 miles per hour before his injury. Now he's down 2.7 miles per hour to 93.5, which not great. And it doesn't matter, because he cannot locate any of his pitches. And when he does, it's right down the middle. 9.82 ERA in 11 innings. He's striking out no one. He's walking everybody. There was a time where maybe we could have gotten excited about Tanner Rainey returning, but yeah. I think that time is long past.
It's and the funny thing, we were talking about this before, it's, you know, Tanner Rainey came back for one game last year in September, and he was throwing 96.2 miles per hour last year. And now all of a sudden, you know, this year he's down to 93.5. So I don't know what happened over the offseason, but yeah, this is definitely concerning and might be the end of Tanner Rainey as a potential closer. You know, any sort of talk of that could be put to bed now. Yeah.
All right. I think we just got a couple more left. Scott Barlow has gone from 93 to 91 miles per hour, a 2 mile per hour difference there on his fastball. He's pitched pretty well thus far, 3.07 ERA, 30% strikeout rate. He's a top 10 holds option for you, right?
Yeah. The velo is, again, he's another guy who, I mean, velo is not really a big factor for him, because he's, you know, he relies on his curveball and slider. But you have that going down to 91 miles per hour is a little bit dicey.
And that fastball has been getting crushed this year, 62.5% ICR.
So I'm not positive on this, but I do feel like this is kind of a thing with Barlow over his career, where he starts off with his low velo, or at least when he was in Kansas City, which has been his career up until now, I guess, starting off years. But I feel like there's a chance he can, you know, work that back up. And I don't know, it's a little concerning, but I do believe in the slider and curveball from him. So for now, I am not overly concerned, but we'll, you know, check back in a month and see where that fastball velo is at.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then the last few, Taylor Saucedo is down 1.5 miles per hour. Colin Poche is down 1.5. We're pretty low on, this is sorted by fastball velocity from 2023. So we're now down into the 92. So these guys are not really relying on fastball velocity anyway. Poche just hit the IL, so maybe that's the reason for his slight decrease in velocity. Will Smith has seen a minus 1.5 mile per hour difference. That's concerning, especially because he's pitched so terribly thus far. I think it's time to close the book on Will Smith ever being the closer in Kansas City. And then lastly, Dylan Floro down 2.5 miles per hour to 89.7 miles per hour, which is, that's not good. I seem to remember the Nationals having put up a sign in their bullpen during spring training saying, "I don't care how fast you throw ball four." And I think they've had a lot of fallers on this list, and it's not like these guys are performing better or have seen their walk rates decrease.
I was like, Floro's somewhat been effective this year, but it's like a weird, it's not going to last, obviously. But so far it's been somewhat
0.64 ERA. Whoa.
Yeah. But well, a 1.09 whip and a,
no home runs, 93.8 left on base. Yeah.
It's not going to last.
No, not at all. But that will do it for our main topic. We discussed the fastball velocity leaderboards across four-seamers, sinkers, and cutters. And we discussed the four-seam fastball velocity improvers from last year to this year. And then also the decliners. A lot more decliners. But these are mostly situations where you just want to keep an eye on these guys. See if things change. See if it's something that's affecting their performance, or see how they're trying to work around it. But these are definitely some names to keep on your mind as we move through the season. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else you've got going on.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I Am Rick Graham. And as usual, just, you know, plugging away at the list every week. So closers, holds, and save plus holds.
Wait, I thought Nick did the list.
I know. I should have said the list, like trademarked or
not,
whatnot.
Not the list.
Not the list. Not
the list.
A trio of different lists that are on the same website. Okay, yeah.
All right. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In The Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. But more specifically, I do the weekend editions of the First Pitch podcast. I do the Monday editions of the Reliever Ranks article. I should have a one-off article coming out either tomorrow or Monday discussing David Bednar. What's the deal with David Bednar? That's what it's called. You know, had to get my one Jerry Seinfeld article in. I have not started researching, so I'm still asking the question myself.
I don't need to know. Yeah, I need to see what you come up with there, because I'm trying to figure that out too. It's a weird one.
Me too. Me too. And then you can find more of my work at Baseball HQ, where I do playing time analysis for the A's, the Giants, and the Diamondbacks. And then you can find my personal podcast, Free Baseball, over at Athletes Hub on Twitter. But that will do it for the 78th episode of In the Pen. We will talk to you all next week.